in a series of oral history interviews with Dr. Walter Lee Moore. Today is December 8, 1981, and we're about to section number 8 on our list of topics. But there were three things that Dr. Moore wanted to cover before we went on to section 8, and they were he had some comments on Dean Oppenheimer, President Jacobson, and analytic geometry. So
I was here, of course, when Dean Oppenheimer was hired to come as dean of the college, and I enjoyed working with him very much, and only had one incident that's of any interest connected with him, and that was when he appointed me as chairman of the personnel committee, which looked into and took the heat off him recommending faculty for promotion and so on.
Yeah.
And I remember very distinctly that this was before World War II, and I don't remember the date, but anyway, I have a penchant for coming to places on time, which is a little bit contrary to the usual Kentucky atmosphere. And so, when I was chairman of this committee, I specified with the committee that they set the date, at which date and hour at which we were to move to meet.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would see to it that the meeting would start at exactly that right time. And I was very much amused at almost every one of the meetings when they came in, they held up their hands and said, Heil Hitler. Because Hitler, you may remember, one of the things he was noted for, in addition to others, was that he always had the trains come on time. So that was amusing to me that they associated with me. But we did start, and even if there was only one committee member there, I started the meeting.
Yeah.
And we had our discussions, and there's no question as to the number of people involved in the discussions. And so I thought to it that we started on time. I think it's probably the only committee meeting in the universe that ever did. Aside from that, when Dean Oppenheimer had a sabbatical to go to Europe, and I remember very distinctly he cautioned me not to jump over the traces while he was gone, because I had a bad habit of speaking my mind whatever happened to be come into it, and occasionally it wasn't always pleasant maybe for my colleagues if they happened to be associated with me. If they did something that I felt wasn't quite kosher for a college professor to do. That was my relation with Dean Oppenheimer, but otherwise our relations were most cordial, and I enjoyed working under him as a dean. I retired, I think, before Dean Barber came in, so I have no statement to make about any other dean except Oppenheimer. He was here for quite a while.
Yeah.
Contrary to the deans recently have changed rather rapidly, but Dean Oppenheimer came here and stayed for quite a long while. In fact, I think they named the building after on the campus, which was very well deserved. My experience with Davidson was that he was the only president we've ever had who invited myself and wife out to dinner at his house. And I felt that he had a real interest in the faculty, more so than almost any other president we've ever had, except for the possible exception of Davidson. Davidson also was very good, and he and I had excellent relationships together. And I met with him several times, and one time I remember our conversation wasn't too good, because I had just found out that the faculty who were retired prior to my retirement had received an extra dividend, which they called the
Prior Service
Benefit. And since I retired 6 months before this date went into effect, I was under the old benefit program, which, well, I don't mind saying it, paid $50 a month, whereas the prior service benefit would have paid $600. And I didn't care too much about the money, but I thought the idea of cutting off the faculty who retired just prior to this date was very bad, and so I went to Dr. Davidson and then Vice President Stricker, who was later president, of course. I went to him and I got a little bit excited, and I don't think I mentioned this in the last program on the tape, but I told you about it later. But after my conversation with Dr. Davidson and Mr. Trickler, I started over towards my office, and all at once I began to be very dizzy and stumbled up the steps and fell down a couple of times. And Dr. Davidson and Dr. Trickler came hurrying out of their office to see what was wrong with me. They knew I hadn't been drinking. And they came into the office, and I was lying down on a cot that I had assembled in the office because I had these dizzy spells quite frequently. And then they sent me down to the hospital and called in a physician who was a neuro specialist. And after the examination, I received the information that I had what is known as Meniere's syndrome, which is a condition brought on by eating an excess amount of sodium salt. And so I immediately put myself, my wife agreed to it, put myself on a minimum salt diet. And since that time, I've had very little recurrence of this syndrome. I did have a recurrence in it down in Cuba when I went on a Navy trip, but that was due to indulgence in alcohol, and I found it had the same effect on me more rapidly. And I took a sip of the refreshments that they served in Cuba, and immediately the ground started coming up towards me, and I knew this wasn't the thing to do, so I have not touched alcohol since. I think it'd be a good idea if some of these drivers had the same kind of syndrome. Maybe we wouldn't have quite so many wrecks from drunken drivers if they get that check on just a little bit of the alcohol. Well, anyway, that's the one unusual experience that I had with Dr. Davidson. The rest of my experiences with Dr. Davidson were very cordial, and we got along very beautifully.
You mentioned that President Jacobson.
That's right. President Jacobson, I think, was the next president after Davidson, if I recall.
He was
either the next one or the next to the next one. I mean, I don't remember the order from Jacobson and Taylor.
Jacobson was president in World War II.
Yeah.
And then came Taylor, and then
In World War II, due to my interest in astronomy, which I'll discuss a little bit later, I was assigned the very delightful thing of teaching the Navy students that came under the V-12 program, teaching them navigation. And I spent most of my time not on the regular navigation, but on celestial navigation, which I was very familiar with. And there's only one incident that I recall that was interesting in that respect. Otherwise, it was just an ordinary teaching job. that I assigned a problem to my students in navigation, and one of the bright students looked it up where I had assigned this ship to go somewhere, and they were to figure out some of the things that are associated with navigating the ship. And they discovered they put this ship down through the middle of Australia. That tickled me quite a bit, and of course my students had a good laugh over that, and we had a very good relations with them. The only thing I objected to in teaching that course was and it didn't last long, it was the attitude that the students had. When I came into the room, they all stood up. And that was very unusual. I wasn't used to that, and so I informed them that I didn't want to be have them stand up when I happened to stand at attention when I came into the room, because I was not an officer of the Navy. So we got along very well, and I enjoyed teaching. I think I did it for 2 years. And then finally they brought in the regular Navy officers here, and one of them took over the navigation. I remember this was at the time when the planetarium came in, which we'll discuss later. But I used the planetarium as a teaching device in teaching the celestial navigation to these sailors, and I found that very, very useful. made a good teaching program to have the students know a little bit about the stars and how they could find their position on the Earth by sighting on the stars at a known time.
So, you said that President Jacobson tried to appoint you
to... President Jacobson, one of the jobs that was given to me, which I didn't mind, was to take a survey of the use of the classrooms in the university. That was in addition to my teaching problems. And I did I will say this, I may be bragging a little bit, but I did a pretty good job in getting rooms assigned to the proper students, and everybody had a room, and while some of the faculty didn't like where I'd put them, in the afternoon especially, they didn't mind too much, and we got along all right. And then one day, the only thing I remember about Dr. Jacobson, we didn't have much converse with one another because I was working under the dean at that time, and just had very little contact with the president. But one day he came to me and asked me if I would be willing to be head of the buildings and grounds, especially the grounds part of it, on the campus. And I think now I would have just laughed at him, but at that time I felt very much put out that he would ask me to do that, knowing, I think he knew that I was a teacher of mathematics, and at that time I think I had the title of associate professor, and to take over the job of building some grounds to me was sort of an insult. And that's what I remember most about President Jacobson. Otherwise I know very little about his ability as a president. I know he didn't last long, but why he didn't last long, I don't know.
Why would he ask you to do that? Was he just shorthanded?
What's that?
Why would he ask you to do that? Was he just shorthanded? Was he asking you to do double duty?
No, I don't really know. I really shouldn't comment on that, because at that time, of course, I thought he was just trying to insult me. And they probably needed the head of the buildings and grounds, but I had no experience doing that. I didn't know anything about plants or anything like that. And it would have been a terrible job. I was doing a horrible job at that. I knew it, and he should have known it. He never should have asked me, but he did. And I didn't like him from then on, I confess.
You mentioned that you wanted to talk
about that.
You said you wanted to talk some about analytic geometry.
No, not Jacobson. No, I was going to talk about analytic geometry.
Okay.
We At the time when I came to the university, I think it was the year before, the requirement of all students to take a course in mathematics at college level was discontinued. It had been in, that is, like freshman English. Everybody had to take freshman English, and everybody had to take a course in algebra, or trigonometry, or both, whichever came about. But Dr. Stevenson had sense enough to see that not all students needed this information, and so before I came here in 1929, that requirement was taken off. But the general trend for college teaching at that time was to have a course in analytic geometry before they could take calculus. And since my major in for my doctor's work was in geometry, and Dr. Stevenson preferred to teach the analysis, that was his field, and teach statistics, which he knew something about and I didn't, and didn't care. So I taught all the courses in analytic geometry. And one of my experiences in that course, which I think was extremely valuable, but on the point of the students, was that I developed the course this way. I called it Advanced Analytic Geometry. And what I did in that course, instead of lecturing myself, which would have been pretty horrible, I had the students themselves give the lectures. And I only met with them officially. Of course, I met with them every time they gave the lecture, obviously. But I only met with them the first of one or two times in order to get the order of the events, order of the program, so that the person giving it first would give material which would be available to the next person and so on. That's a natural thing to do in mathematics because you can't just jump into the middle of a mathematics program and make sense out of it. They still try to do it now and then, but it doesn't work. Never has and never will. But mathematics has to develop from early concepts, and incidentally, there's an article in the last issue of Mathematical Monthly by a very famous American mathematician by the name of Boas, who outlines the same idea that you need concrete experience in mathematics before you attempt to teach rigor and proofs and all that sort of thing, which is the basis as far as a professional mathematician is concerned of his subject, but which makes mathematics extremely unintelligible to the average individual. And mathematics is not that unintelligible if properly taught. And I had sense enough in this one class to let the students do the lecturing, and then I listened to them, and they were given their grade in the course on, depending on how well they did the lecturing and prepared their material and gave a decent presentation. And I limited the number of students in that course so that each student would have to give at least three lectures during the term. So that worked out very well. But one thing I learned, I had just one sabbatical in the time that I was associated as teaching in the university. And in that, I went to University of Chicago, and I went up to Case Institute in Cleveland, and to Ohio State University in Columbus. I visited those three places during that semester and stayed long enough at each one to get an idea about what they were doing in the field of mathematics. And I discovered that all of these institutions, which at that time were, I think, a little bit better in mathematics than we were at the University of Louisville in the sense of dealing more with the modern mathematics, and I found that they were discontinuing the teaching of analytic geometry and put it in as just a part of the calculus course. So when I came back from that sabbatical, I conferred with Dr. Stevenson, and he agreed, and we dropped teaching with analytic geometry, and I don't think they're still teaching analytic geometry as a special subject. Although I think that's a shame in a way, because it's a very interesting field, but it's not too useful. I had a couple of courses in mathematics that I enjoyed teaching very much, which I felt had no utility, but which was interesting in the material itself. In addition to the analytic geometry, one of these was projective geometry, which is a technical subject, and we don't need to go into details on it. But I remember telling my students that in this course now, we do this for fun. We don't do it because you're going to be trained to do something. And after I had given this course several semesters, one of my students got a job with one of the airplane companies out in California. And he wrote back to me saying that I had made a mistake when I said that projective geometry was not useful, because he found that some of the things that I had been teaching for fun, they were using in the design of airplane wings. And so I had a good feeling for myself that, well, at last I had some use for this course. And incidentally, one of the things I think you asked in the written thing we didn't discuss in this series was the change in the type of mathematics that's taught. And as I say, in the early, when I was going to school, and also for quite a while after my teaching experience, the mathematics went, as I mentioned a moment ago, that we taught analytic geometry and then calculus and built them up that way. And at that time, it would have been horrible idea just to teach calculus to high school students. But as you well know now, a calculus course is put in as a senior course in high school. Elementary calculus, to be sure, but nevertheless, introduction to it, because the material in calculus is probably one of the most useful of all mathematical materials, except perhaps statistics. That might be more useful, but I don't know. I don't know statistics well enough to comment about it, so that I won't try anymore. But anyway, I was interested in teaching the projective geometry, similar in style, not in content, of course, but in style, similar to the teaching of Euclidean geometry in the high schools. That is, you had a series of axioms, and then you build on that and build up a structure of mathematics, which is a very interesting structure, even though it wasn't, to my idea, very highly useful. It was a very interesting one. And incidentally, out of that structure comes the idea of perspective, which artists had known long before it was developed as a mathematical theory. It was developed in Europe, I think, 100 years or so before. That is just the idea of perspective, which you know, I think. And whoever listens to this will probably know it. Of course, they don't. They can look it up. But that intrigued me to teach the geometry in that way, that is, as a geometry course, and mainly reasoning. And of course you had to draw figures in the process of reasoning, and that helped a little bit. But that was the way it was done. And later, when I retired from mathematics, and I don't remember the name right offhand, I don't recall the name of the woman that took over that course. She went to a field which involved projective geometry, but involved the analysis, that is the analytic part, rather than the synthetic, which we call it, like Euclidean geometry in the high school. And that is a change that has taken place in mathematical content in most places where projective geometry is taught. They you can't even get a textbook anymore, as far as I know, in projective geometry, as taught the way I did it back then, as a course like in Euclidean geometry in high school. The fact of the matter is, I had an idea, and if I had been a little bit better writer, I probably would have tried to write a textbook for high school that would have replaced Euclidean geometry, which has not very much validity, really, even for high school students, and replace it with projective geometry because of its relation to our field, you know, perspective and all that. And it would have given them the same training in reasoning, and the material would have been much more in keeping with our present work in taking photographs, for example, and drawing pictures and things like that, where you need the knowledge, which, as I said a moment ago, the artist had long before it became into mathematics, on this business of perspective. There's a whole mathematical theory that, at the time I was teaching it, that was associated with that concept.
Can you talk some about your movement? Can you move from this into the development of your interest in astronomy and the things that you
did? Yeah, I'll do that now, I think. I started my interest in astronomy. I may have said this in one of my previous interviews, I don't know. But anyway, my interest in astronomy went back to a course that I had in Albion College, where I had an astronomy teacher. I took 1 year of astronomy in undergraduate work in college. And my teacher was kind of a lazy guy, and the equipment in the astronomical observatory, which was on the campus there at Albion, was in pretty bad shape. And since I had shown some skill in mechanics, this teacher gave me a key to the observatory and the permission to fix up the equipment, which I enjoyed very much. I did. And that was the real interest that I had in astronomy, I must confess. We had a 6-inch Clark refractor, and we had a Rinkler clock, which is one of the original kinds of precision clocks that at one time was used in the bureau standards for timekeeping. And of course now, as you may know, the clocks that they keep are kept in time by a crystal. And the vibrations of the crystal are translated into timekeeping, so that they become very accurate. And the timing at the present time is such that you can get even fractions of a second out of their broadcast, if you know how. I mean, it can be done. And it's very precise. That is right on the second. They give a beep on the radio. So that was my first introduction to astronomy. I hadn't had none, even though I was born in the country and had plenty of chance to look at the stars. I didn't do it until I got to Albion College. Then when I went to Illinois, I was more interested in physics than I was in astronomy. So that while I was majoring in mathematics, I minored in physics and didn't take any astronomy in my graduate work. Then, when I got here at Louisville, I may have mentioned this before, but I'll mention it again, it won't hurt to repeat. When I got here at Louisville,